Good afternoon, and thank you for tuning in to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, Diana, here with you every Saturday to bring you the news and top stories from the Military Times, your independent news source about your military. Now, before I get into the Military Times, I wanted to touch on a subject that came across my desk from a different source, also concerning the military, this article from Business Insider. However, I felt it was relevant and important to share, so here goes nothing. Religious Freedom Group says U.S. military members were pressured by commanders to see the Melania documentary. It was the story of the weekend. Melania, Amazon's documentary on First Lady Melania Trump, beat expectations at the box office, becoming one of the best-performing documentaries in recent years, with an opening weekend gross of $7 million across 1,778 screens. Now, whether it makes back its $75 million investment is another story. Despite dismal critic reviews, the numbers suggest audiences turned out for Melania to support the First Lady. One advocacy group suggests that the reality may be more complicated. Mikey Weinstein, the president and founder of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, said the nonprofit received reports from 8 bases around the world that U.S. military members were being pressured to see Melania. "People are scared," said Weinstein, a former Air Force officer and attorney who said his group is made up of nearly 100,000 current and former members of the U.S. military and represents those who feel pressured or coerced into unconstitutional religious observances. They were pressured to see the movie. "Your military superior, that is not your shift manager at Taco Bell or Starbucks. They have complete and total control over you." In an email Weinstein shared with Business Insider, an active duty enlisted member of the U.S. military said they were writing on behalf of a dozen of their unit members and their families who felt pressured by their unit commander to see the movie. The MRFF did not disclose the name of the person who sent the email. In the email, this person said their commander suggested the unit and their family members join him, his wife, and their children at a showing of Melania at an off-base movie theater. The screening was designated as one of the commander's unit activity events, morale-boosting activities that can range from flag football and barbecues to movie nights, the email said. The military member who sent the email said the unit is required to attend at least 3 of the 4 unit activity events that are scheduled each month or face a penalty. Asked if any of the MRFF members who contacted him skipped the movie, Weinstein said, "Every one of our clients who came to us either went to see it or suddenly got sick." When reached for comment, a Department of Defense official told Business Insider that there is no Department of War directive requiring service members to see this film, though the film is fantastic. As a quick side note, all of the events described in the article in the endorsement at the very end, the quotation by that representative from the Department of Defense, are all considered violations of the Hatch Act. All right, up next, moving on to the Military Times. This one concerning military history. The National Park Service removes Native American signage at Little Bighorn National Monument. For more than 150 years, the Battle of the Little Bighorn has been one of the most written about subjects in American history. Was it because Lieutenant Colonel George Custer disobeyed orders, disregarded the warning of his scouts, violated the principles of warfare by dividing his command and was ambushed? Was he the victim of a conspiracy, or was he simply outsmarted and outgunned? Debate over how Custer and his 5 companies of the 7th Cavalry were overwhelmed in southeastern Montana Territory by a combined force of Lakota and Cheyenne warriors on June 25, 1876, has not been resolved, and now controversy is developing once again, this time over its interpretation at Montana's Little Bighorn National Monument. Following President Donald Trump's March 2025 quote, restoring truth and sanity to American history, unquote, order, the National Park Service recently removed signage describing broken promises to Native American tribes and references to the loss of indigenous culture and language under boarding school systems, according to a local Montana outlet, KTVQ. According to Trump's executive order, the Secretary of the Interior has the power to, quote, take action to ensure that all public monuments, memorials, statues, markers, or similar properties within the Department of the Interior's jurisdiction do not contain descriptions, depictions, or other content that inappropriately disparage Americans past or living, including persons living in colonial times, and instead focus on the greatness of the achievements and progress of the American people, or with respect to natural features, the beauty, abundance, and grandeur of the American landscape. Within the past year, signs referencing slavery, climate change, and Native American history have been removed from at least 17 national park sites in 6 states, the most recent being at Independence National Historical Park in Philadelphia, where the Trump administration took down an exhibit that memorialized 9 people enslaved by George Washington. Workers can be seen taking a crowbar to the panels, including one that detailed the slave trade and slave economy, the New York Times reported. In Montana, the removal has not gone unnoticed. This week, the Northern Cheyenne Tribal Council unanimously voted 11-0 to prevent changes to or removals of Native American markers, monuments, and signage at the battlefield, according to a press release. The tribe also cited Montana's Article X in its constitution that recognizes and works to preserve the distinct and unique cultural heritage of the American Indians and is committed in its educational goals to the preservation of their cultural integrity. It's disturbing, disgusting, and wrong. Kiana Kachora, an employee at the Custer Battlefield Trading Post, told KTVQ, "You should not erase other people's history because it makes you uncomfortable. We're going to keep telling our story. This victory happened 150 years ago, and they're welcome to join us because we're going to have a victory." Lucy Realbird, a teacher at Crow Agency Public Schools, told the outlet, "We're still going to continue teaching our language, teaching our history, being who we are as Absaluka, as indigenous people and the original people of this land," Realbird added. Okay, moving on to some military political news. Navy Secretary John Felon reportedly listed in Epstein flight manifest. The Navy's top civilian leader was listed on a passenger manifest list for convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's private plane, documents reportedly show. According to a flight manifest, Navy Secretary John Felon traveled from London to New York City on March 3, 2006, on the disgraced financier's private jet, CNN reported Friday. Epstein was awaiting trial for child sex trafficking charges when he was found dead in his jail cell on August 10, 2019, at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City. His death was ruled a suicide by medical examiners. A close friend of Felon's confirmed to CNN he was on the flight, but that it was his only instance Felon interacted with Epstein and that Felon, then working in the financial sector, was invited to fly by the late Bear Stearns CEO Jimmy Kane. CNN did not identify the friend. The friend told CNN that Felon did not know they would be flying in Epstein's plane prior to their arrival and that Felon never interacted or spoke with Epstein again. CNN further reported that there is no evidence Felon was aware of any wrongdoing by Epstein or Epstein's associates at the time of the flight. Felon founded Rugger Management LLC, a private investment firm based in Palm Beach, Florida. He was also a major donor for President Donald Trump's second re-election campaign, Military Times previously reported. Felon's name is listed alongside 12 other passengers that day, according to CNN, including what appears to be Jean-Luc Brunel, a French modeling agent and colleague of Epstein who was found dead in his jail cell in 2022 after being charged with sexual assault and rape of a minor. Brunel's name appears to have been spelled incorrectly on the manifest list as Jean-Luc Brunel. 6 of the 13 passengers' names were redacted. The flight manifest was part of a document released from the House Oversight Committee last year, CNN reported. The Department of Justice released 3.5 million documents related to Epstein last week. Trump announced Fallon as his pick for Navy Secretary on November 26, 2024. He was sworn in 4 months later. Military Times reached out to the Navy Secretary's office for comment. Now moving on to the Pentagon and Congress section, research on problem gambling included in defense funding law. Gambling addiction is now a topic that researchers can study under a Department of Defense program that provides federal funding for issues affecting U.S. military personnel and veterans. For the first time, the fiscal 2026 Defense Appropriations Bill included problem gambling as a research topic sanctioned by the Defense Department under its peer-reviewed medical research program. Gambling addiction joins more than 240 subjects authorized by Congress to receive funding under the program. Last July, the National Council on Problem Gambling joined forces with gaming companies BetMGM, MGM Resorts, and FanDuel to ask Senate appropriators to include funding for gambling research in the Pentagon's fiscal 2026 budget bill. According to the 2022 Defense Department Health-Related Behaviors Survey, 1.6% of active duty service members reported a problem with gambling, and 1.7% of reserve members screened positive for a gambling addiction. Despite this, however, there's been a dearth of research on the impact of gambling on the military community, according to the NCPG. Being listed among the allowable topics in the peer-reviewed medical research program does not guarantee that the subject will be studied, but it makes federal funding available and is a step in the right direction, according to NCPG Executive Director Heather Maurer. For the first time, federal research funding is being made available to study gambling addiction. This development is especially critical for service members and veterans who face elevated risk and have historically been underserved by research, Maurer said in a statement. An estimated 7.5 million to 10.5 million Americans have a gambling disorder, considered a behavioral health issue similar to alcohol, drug, and tobacco addiction, according to NCPG. Problem gambling is linked to a six-fold increase in homelessness among veterans with the disorder, and 40% of those seeking treatment for gambling addiction have attempted suicide, the group said. The Fiscal 2026 Consolidated Appropriations Act, which includes defense funding, contains $370 million for research on the topics allowed under the PRMP. It was signed into law by President Donald Trump on Tuesday. The program provides federal funding in several scientific study areas that affect military families and are also relevant to public health. Subjects include infectious diseases, autoimmune disorders, cardiovascular health, internal medicine, respiratory health, rare diseases, and more. Advocates hope researchers will apply for funding to examine the impact of gambling on military personnel, to include online gambling and sports betting, intervention, and treatment. This inclusion sends a clear signal that gambling addiction is a public health issue, not a stigma, Maurer said. When we invest in research, we reduce stigma, improve care, and build the knowledge needed to protect individuals, families, and readiness. The Department of Veterans Affairs operates two residential gambling addiction treatment centers, in Cleveland at the Louis Stokes VA Medical Center and at the VA Residential Recovery and Renewal Center in Las Vegas. More than 3,000 slot machines are located on U.S. military installations in Germany, Japan, and South Korea, generating $100 million a year for recreational facilities and programs. In 2024, lawmakers offered an amendment to the Fiscal 2025 Defense Policy Bill that would have banned slot machines from overseas bases, saying their presence increases the risk for gambling addiction among service members. The proposal did not make it into the final version of the law. All right, and this headline up next, the U.S. Army's quiet rotation in the Philippines. The U.S. Army's rotation in the Philippines is easy to overlook. Experts say that might be the point. The service confirmed this week that in July 2025, it established a rotational presence in the Southeast Asian nation. The roughly 50-person force is operating under U.S. Army Pacific with coordination through Task Force Philippines, a spokesman said Wednesday. The move marks a change in how the Army engages with the sprawling archipelago, the service said. While the rotational force is not permanently assigned, this represents a shift from previous year's iterative engagement cycle to a more sustained rotational presence, enabling deeper and more consistent collaboration with our Philippine Army counterparts, Colonel Isaac Taylor, Chief of Public Affairs for the U.S. Army Pacific, said in a statement. The contingent's mission centers on building Army-to-Army partnerships and improving infrastructure, he said. The Philippines once played host to a large U.S. military presence, but permanent U.S. ground forces largely left in the early 1990s, after, against a backdrop of growing nationalism, the country's lawmakers voted to close the major American installations. Later military agreements allowed U.S. forces back to the country, but to a smaller and less permanent degree. U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and his counterpart Philippine Defense Secretary Gilbert Teodoro Jr. announced the formation of Task Force Philippines last fall. The effort, analysts said, could deter China from acting on its claims to the contested South China Sea. While U.S. Naval and Air Forces have anchored U.S. military posture in the region, the Army's role has historically been more limited. The Navy and the Air Force tend to dominate the Indo-Pacific, just based on the capabilities they have in place, said Catherine Kosbinski, Director of Studies at the Center for a New American Security. The new task force, she said, is reinforcing the need for the Army as part of the joint force in regional security. Gregory Poling, director of the Southeast Asia Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, said the significance of the Army's rotation lies in how it formalizes a presence that had already become routine. U.S. forces have operated in the Philippines regularly for years, through training and exercises, even before this new development. The service's latest move reflects continuity and is taking a model of a more persistent heel-toe rotational presence focused on the South China Sea and making it a little larger, Poling told Military Times. Those waters, in some areas rich in resources, are also claimed in part by Vietnam, Malaysia, Brunei, Indonesia, and the Philippines. Tensions between the Philippines and China have escalated in recent years to include confrontations between Chinese Coast Guard ships and fishermen in disputed waters. Poling also said that formalizing a task force could enable quicker, higher-level communications and increase the pace of day-to-day interactions between U.S. military personnel, particularly Army personnel, and their Philippine partners. Incremental steps towards better connections between leaders of both countries and the timing of when new military capabilities are introduced can matter as much as their presence, according to Stacy Pettyjohn, director of the defense program at the Center for a New American Security. The rotation is a really modest step that is very small, but it is not necessarily an inconsequential one, Pettyjohn said in an interview with Military Times. Those smaller gradual steps, she said, are likely to be denounced by Beijing, but not to provoke some greater response. Meanwhile, in recent news, negotiators push for more talks after U.S. and Iran convene in Oman. U.S. and Iranian officials convened in Oman on Friday, opening the door to a modest easing of tensions, even as American warships mass in the Arabian Sea. The talks, arranged by regional power brokers, brought together President Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, in an effort to stave off a wider war in the Middle East. Navy Admiral Brad Cooper, the head of U.S. Central Command, was also part of the U.S. delegation in Muscat, an American official told Military Times. Oman's foreign minister, Badr al-Busadi, who mediated between the two sides, wrote in a post on X after the meeting that the next step was to reconvene in due course. Ahead of the negotiations, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio cast the meeting as a diplomatic opening to advance American strategic interests, rather than a concession. He said the negotiations would have to encompass other topics, in addition to Iran's nuclear program, including its ballistic missile arsenal, support for proxy groups, and the Islamic Republic's treatment of their own people. Tehran rejected the broader agenda, insisting discussions remain confined to the nuclear issue. The U.S. military has positioned a fleet of warships and dozens of F-15E attack plans in the CENTCOM area of responsibility, and satellite imagery suggests additional firepower is on its way. About 40,000 American troops remain stationed across the region, according to U.S. officials. Trump described the naval buildup as a, quote, massive armada, and warned that failure to reach a deal could provoke an attack, quote, far worse than the last time. In June, as Iran fought a 12-day war with Israel, the president used the threat of devastating U.S. force to ramp up pressure for an agreement. When Tehran missed Trump's deadline to finalize a nuclear deal, American B-2 stealth bombers were deployed, dropping bunker buster bombs on Iran's nuclear facilities. Araghchi, in an interview with Iranian state TV on Friday, acknowledged the first face-to-face discussions since last summer's war were hampered by his nation's previous distrust of the Americans, which he said was a serious challenge. Any progress, he suggested, would hinge both on Washington's conduct and decisions taken in Tehran. If this process continues, I think we will reach a good framework for an understanding, Araghchi added. The White House contends that if a path for diplomacy exists, Trump intends to fully explore it, but force remains an option. The threat was on display just days before the talks. U.S. forces shot down an Iranian drone that they said was aggressively approaching the USS Abraham Lincoln aircraft carrier in the Arabian Sea. I would remind the Iranian regime that the president has many options at his disposal, aside from diplomacy, as the commander-in-chief of the most powerful military in the history of the world, White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt said Thursday. Iranian officials have issued stark warnings that they would retaliate against U.S. and Israeli targets should Trump authorize a strike. The regime's allies, who abstained in the 12-day war, are signaling their readiness to enter the fray. One such paramilitary group, Kataib Hezbollah, said U.S. attack would result in an all-out war in the region, while the Houthi rebels have threatened to resume their attacks on vessels in the Red Sea. Sina Azodi, the director of Middle East Studies at George Washington University, told Military Times that the Iranian military strategy is shaped by martyrdom forces who vow to fight and die. Azodi pointed to the Iran-Iraq War nearly 5 decades ago, a protracted conflict marked by mass casualties, as one of the bloodiest of the late 20th century. In 8 years, Iranians lost 250,000 troops, he explained. For them, it's what the soldier is made for, to go and die. Whereas in American culture, a loss of life matters so much, and Iranians are aware of this. So if they, quote-unquote, kill Americans, that's a win for them. Nobody should be under the illusion that Iran can win a war, Azodi continued. But the regime would want to make the conflict as costly and as problematic as possible for the Americans and everybody in the region. If they think they're fighting for their survival, they're going to throw everything they have. All right, and lastly, U.S. Marines recently flew on New England Patriots' private jet to Norway. Just days before the New England Patriots secured a spot in the 2026 Super Bowl and moved within reach of a record 7th championship title, U.S. Marines were passengers aboard the team's private jet en route to Norway. The Marines deployed to Bardufoss on a combination of military and commercially chartered aircraft, including a Patriots-branded Boeing 767, to begin preparations for a Norwegian-led winter exercise scheduled for March, the Marine Corps told Military Times. Roughly 3,000 Marines are expected to join other U.S. forces and some 25,000 personnel from a dozen nations for Cold Response 26. A significant portion of the American contingent hails from the 2nd Marine Division, based at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. The drills are designed to test collective defense capabilities, U.S. readiness, and interoperability with NATO allies under the harsh conditions of the Arctic. The aircraft the Marines traveled on are part of a fleet operated by Omni Air International, which is under contract with U.S. Transportation Command to provide chartered flights for military personnel. Omni Air operates two Patriots-owned 767s that are used for team travel, as well as a range of other flights, including humanitarian missions and military charter services, according to the company. Nicknamed Aircraft with a K, after team owner Robert Kraft, the planes are painted in the Patriots' red, white, and blue, and emblazoned with the franchise's 6 Lombardi trophies on their tails. Inside the cabins have been retrofitted with all first-class seats and features a state-of-the-art in-flight entertainment system. The 767 we have typically carries 260 people, but since we didn't have a need to travel 260 people, we wanted to utilize the space on the plane to give more space for people, Jim Nolan, the chief operating officer of Kraft Sports and Entertainment, said. The Patriots are set to face the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you once again for tuning into Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your host, signing out.